Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, dude? How are you?
Can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear, yeah. Looking good, all sounding right. Good.
All right.
You're not in your usual throne, though. What happened to the throne room?
Is it different? I don't know.
I thought you usually had like a huge red back leather. Like, oh no, this is the same. There you go. You're slumped down.
Yeah, yeah.
Now. I can see it. It's more of a recliner job. Man, yep. I don't know about you, but this is just the craziest time of year. Like, normally it's crazy anyway, but then you throw in just, you know, the current climate, quote unquote, absolute madness. How's your last couple of weeks been? Just chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been so bad, really, because it's like the anticipation of gifts or parties and is so reduced.
And
minimize now to where it's like nothing's really happening, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, I've just been wrapping up some work stuff, but really it's only just because I anticipate a lot of other people are going to kind of wind down, but like, I'm not, you know, like I got, you know, the train keeps rolling, man. The rock don't stop over here, you know? So yeah, I don't know. It's been mellower than usual, I think, which I'm very happy about.
I had a great chat with Zach the other day, so thank you very much for setting that one up. It was good.
Of course.
I saw him out in Houston as well when I was out in Texas. I saw him, saw Phil. I got to actually meet the rest of the Black Label guys. I'd never properly met them before. It was a good time.
Yeah. What were you doing in Texas, of all places?
So next year, touch wood, if it all goes to plan, Hot Wheels Monster Trucks Live is coming to the UK for a big arena tour, and I'm hosting the shows. So the company that owns it all, Mattel, they flew me and the guy that I'm co-hosting the shows with, Alex Baker, they flew us out to Texas, to Fort Worth, to see the show, you know, digest it, learn it, meet the team. So that was like the premise of the trip was work. And then I just kind of asked them, I said, would you mind if you got my flight back a week later, just so as I'm going all that way, I can use the time and you know, see some people, maybe record some podcasts and have a bit of a doss. So yeah, I went to like Fort Worth, Austin. I'd never been to Austin before, the most amazing city, out of South by Southwest season as well. So just kind of saw it for what it was, which is almost like LA, but just maybe even cooler. Here we go. First cat of the podcast. Hell yeah. Hopefully we get the two. What's the other one called, man, with the cutest face in the world, the black cat you've got?
Oh, that's Jackie Daytona is the black one. And then I've got another one that looks like him, but it's Tuxedo, and that's Little Champ. This one is Captain here.
So you've got three cats?
Yep.
Love it. Every day's cat day in your house.
Every day, man. So, and this one, Captain, he loves being on Zoom. She's like, oh, you're on Zoom? I guess I better get in the mix.
Well, I had your old bandmate on, John Five, recently, right? And he's obviously got those Egyptian furless things. And his cat would like walk right up to the Zoom, kind of check it out, and then turn around to like look at John. And the view on his camera was just like the cat's butthole.
Yep. You might get that here as well. That definitely happens.
So you saw recently Michael Alago, who is a dear friend of mine, an absolute legend in the music business and just a lovely man. Where does that relationship begin? How do you guys know each other?
I mean, well, first thing, you know, what's fascinating is it's like a guy like that who I haven't seen in years, but then with the pandemic and everything, like I haven't been to New York for 2 years because of that. Right. So like you're running into these people that you haven't seen in years just because. And it's like nothing has changed. Like, you know what I mean? Like on one hand, you go like, man, 2 years seems like a really long time. And then all of a sudden it's like that, you know, it's like that scene in Event Horizon when they're, it's the space time continuum that joins the two worlds together or two sides together. And it just becomes one. And it's kind of like that. It's just like to where it's like, man, this seems like forever when you're in the midst of it. And now that I see you, I haven't seen you in years. It just feels like yesterday. So, which is, I don't know, it's just kind of fascinating, no real point. But Michael Alago, that goes back to the 90s when I was in a band called Drown, Drown, in LA. And he signed us to Elektra Records. And, that was like 93, I think. And, you know, a lot of my career actually spiraled out of that band, even though the band itself didn't do anything. That band, I met him, obviously he signed us. And then we were managed by a guy named Walter O'Brien and Andy Gould, who had a company called the Piranha Brothers. Amazing. And Walter O'Brien managed Pantera and Andy Gould managed White Zombie. So imagine that, dude, like White Zombie and Pantera management company in the early to mid 90s, right? I mean, these were the two biggest bands of the genre at that time.
Yep.
And so because of that relationship inadvertently became how I ended up in Rob Zombie's band, right? Because it was like they managed White Zombie. Rob came down to listen to our record when we were recording it. And then I think Michael organized something where it was us and Rob and Sherry. And we went to go see Nightmare Before Christmas in LA, like opening, you know, opening weekend or something. And so that's kind of how I met him. And it was this random sort of turn of events that all kind of led into my career that at the time, you know, I didn't have the foresight that was what was going to happen or how it was going to happen. I thought the band that I was going to be in was going to be the thing, not everything surrounding it. So it was kind of interesting really in a way, but you know, I run into him from time to time. And like I said, I hadn't been in New York in years. So whenever I was there, we reached out and he gave me a copy of his book and hung out and had lunch and caught up. And it's kind of exciting.
Took some photos of you. I saw a couple of photos that he took because he's a great photographer as well.
Yeah, there's no escaping that. And
does he roll up to meet with the camera in tow? Does he like,
let's go? Yes. And it's looking like he's thinking about getting back in the music business, which I find to be very exciting. You know, I think that he comes from a time of people when A&R was an art, and he's an artist of music and A&R. And I feel like there's not a lot of those dudes left. And the art of that is certainly didn't transcend into future generations. Like we don't have people that have the vision that he has. And so if that is something that he's really serious about, I'm excited about the prospect of him getting in the back into the music business on some level.
Well, I'll give you an example of why he is that. Is he was on my podcast with Jesse Leach recently, Stoke the Fire. And the minute we started the show, he just started breaking down, not even a Killswitch record, which is obviously Jesse's main band, his side project band, Times of Grace. Michael just started talking about that album in a way which would put a lot of music journalists that I know to shame. Like, he just instantly got it. And he was like, this is why this record is great. This is why you're who you are, and why you're an artist and you know, like a unique voice in this industry. And he just kind of blew us away, especially Jesse, who's obviously receiving, you know, this high praise and like well thought out constructive praise. And you know, guys like that, as you say, they just get the art form, don't they, in such a way that does align them with the artist themselves. And as you say, there's so few characters like that in the business side of things, because you're obviously both as well, you're an artist and a businessman, so you straddle both and you get it. And there's not many guys like you or Michael left, is there?
No, man. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, people that don't know, I encourage you to, you know, watch his documentary or read his book. But I mean, a lot of the reasons, Matt, why we're even here to be able to have a conversation or to have met each other on tour is largely in part because of him, right? Because if he didn't sign Metallica to a major label on their second album, and they didn't have the budgets to create Master of Puppets and Justice for All and the Black Record moving forward, right? Like, if they were just a band that ended up still on Megaforce Records, they could quite possibly be just like this thrash band that we liked in the 80s, right? Like, they may not be the most monumental, biggest rock band of all time. And that's pretty fascinating to think about, that like, he saw that on Ride the Lightning, you know what I mean? He saw that really in Kill 'Em All. He saw it then. Yeah. And
well,
knew
even
that
with White Zombie, dude, he
them.
Said when he first saw them, they didn't even have songs. It was just like noise. But there was something about them that was special.
Right. You know, and so I think, you know, without knowing it, we all sort of owe him a debt of gratitude on some level that he brought those things into the world of our genre that were pivotal and revolutionary, really. I mean, in terms of, you know, like Metallica, sure, obvious, but like, you know, White Zombie even, you know, I mean, that was like, dude, they were getting played on K-Rock and stuff. And it was like, what is going on? And so it's, dude, he's a legend. And so I look forward to him getting back in the business and seeing what he sees that maybe the rest of us don't see, you know, because it's like, dude, we need some clarity right now. I mean, because I was talking to him about it and I was like, dude, when you were signing bands, the ceiling of where a band could go was limitless. And now it kind of feels like that ceiling is considerably much lower. You know, there's not very many breakthroughs in that. And so I'd be curious, very curious, to have his perspective on that and just be able to bring the next wave of influential, huge bands of this genre, you know, and see if he could identify those. It's, you know, kind of fascinating.
Amen. And he was telling me the story when I spoke to him about how he suggested Jason Newsted for Metallica at that obviously critical time when they lost, you know, the legendary bassist. Am I right in thinking that you were nearly in that conversation, or were for a minute? Did I hear that right?
I was minorly in. Yeah, I was minorly in that conversation. The way that I remember that it went down was, I was in a band called Cryptic Slaughter, and we were signed to Metal Blade Records at the time, and we had an A&R guy named William Howe, and Lars called Metal Blade Records, because, you know, that was the Brian Slagle. Metal Blade Records was the first label to put out a Metallica song. Was song one, side one, Metal Massacre compilation record, the first one, the first edition. And so that was the first place anyone ever heard Metallica, was on that compilation record. So Lars reached out to William and Metal Blade and was like, hey, this is our, you know, our situation. Who do you recommend on the roster that might be good to audition? Now, coincidentally, as well as Michael, but I think William probably suggested Jason as well, because Flotsam and Jetsam was on Metal Blade at the time. Right. He called me, William did, and was like, hey, we got this call from Lars. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, of course, but you know, it's probably a little far out of my league. And I think I had just cut my long hair to short hair at that point.
Your opportunity right there.
The opportunity, man. You know, so yeah.
Because that was that time, wasn't it? Where it was like, unless your head's toned black and you've got long hair. There was a funny advert in the UK. I'm not sure whether it was ever aired in the US, but there was an advert for like a detergent, right? A washing detergent. And basically there's like a band and they're all there in black. And one guy shows up for an audition because his detergent has like put in the wrong colors with the black or whatever. So this guy turns up all in gray and they're just like, no way. And that was like a mainstream TV ad for washing detergent. That's how cemented that whole kind of cliche was at that time. It was like long hair, black clothes, otherwise get out.
Otherwise get out, man. No doubt. Yeah. So yeah, in hindsight, Jason was the right guy for the job. I think I was probably too young and too naive to have even been able to handle that situation, at the time. Whatever. Yeah. I was sort of, like I said, minorly in the mix on that. That's my story.
that's the toughest boots to fill ever as well, man. And Michael said and it's obviously been well documented how mean they were to Jason. And Michael's take on that was it's because they were young and they were inexperienced and they were grieving and they were taking out a lot of their pain and their hurt on this guy that had nothing to do with Cliff's passing, but he's just the guy there in his place. So that's not an easy gig, is it? You talk about filling boots and obviously, Jakey Lee with Randy, with the Aussie comparison, but I just feel like that Metallica one was just a very difficult time to be in that band. So you maybe dodged a bullet there, Blasco.
It would have been very difficult. I think that his perception of that is correct. They were young, they were inexperienced. Their future wasn't all the way cemented yet. At that point, you got to think about that, dude. Like, they didn't even have a music video yet. Like, the music video didn't come till One, mm-hmm. which was Newstead, right? Like, they didn't have, like, they weren't a huge band yet. They were, but in terms of the type of band that they were, but they weren't Metallica. Mass appeal. Not quite yet, man. I loved that band at that time. Dude, I just went and was listening to And Justice for All and Puppets and stuff I haven't listened to those records in a long time. And I just went back and started revisiting that stuff. And it's like the songwriting is so crazy, Blackened and Damage Incorporated. And Dyer's Eve and all the shit. Like, I'm just like, fuck, this is why I love this band, And they were just so ahead of their time, that's my Metallica love.
Are you going to go to the 40th anniversary shows this weekend? Is that like an open gig thing or is it just a stream thing? What's the deal with that?
I'm not really sure. I don't really know. I haven't. It's like the end of the year and there's so much crazy stuff going on. It's like, I didn't even give that much time, unfortunately. So, but now I got to look into it, but it does seem like it's a streaming thing.
Well, you're probably best off just safe at home with the cats, mate. This is the other thing. If you want to enjoy Christmas, stay home, everybody.
That's definitely what's happening. Yeah.
What's so Cryptic Slaughter, were they like a national touring act? Were they signed? Like how far? Because you were in that band for quite a while, right? Pre-Zombie. So what kind of level were they operating at?
Yeah, that was my high school band. It's crazy to think, it's like, with the exception of Les, our guitar player, the rest of us were all in high school.
Right.
And Les was a few years older and he was going to college. But dude, we sent a demo tape to Metal Blade Records and they sent back a contract and we signed it and we put out 3 records and went on tour by the time I graduated high school.
Incredible. And were your parents supportive of that? Were they cool with that?
They totally were, which in hindsight is totally bonkers. And because you got to figure, this is 1986 through 1988. No internet, no cell phones. You go on tour, it's like you're putting some quarters in a payphone and calling home just to check in. And maybe they picked up the phone and maybe they didn't. You know, like if there was something bad that happened, like they wouldn't really know. So,
well, also, dude, this was like satanic panic era, wasn't it? Like, I don't know if your family was in any way religious, but like that was that time when metal music was still, you know, deemed to be the devil's music by certain people. And it was dangerous and it was, you know, like outlaw music. And, you know, there's a lot of criminals and ne'er-do-wellers that were in the scene. And it was a crazy time, especially the crossover stuff that you were doing with that band, you know, like Suicidal Tendencies, bands like that. That was like full on gang shit.
It was a crazy time. And to kind of look back at it in hindsight, you know, we all ended up just fine, right? Like, but we were so young and we were around a bunch of older dudes that were all on meth, right? And we were kind of too young and naive to really kind of, you know, because like we all lived at home with our parents. Like, none of the bands that we toured with or that we played shows with or whatever, like none of them were as young as we are. Like they were all kind of just like, you know, just crusty metal dudes, right? That just figured it out or whatever, like lived in band houses or crashed on couches and, you know, whatever. It was a degenerate bunch of fucking dudes, right? Mm-hmm. For real. And that influence didn't rub off on us in any way, which is actually in hindsight kind of amazing that that none of us ended up, you know, being shitheads. And we did our thing and we graduated high school and broke up because we all had other interests and it wasn't like Cryptic Slaughter was a career choice. And we all just kind of went our separate ways and I, you know, pursued music and being in a band and, you know, that ended up working out, I guess, kind of luckily for me.
Have you always been on that path since as long as you can remember? Like when you started getting into bands like Metallica and you're falling in love with music, did you decide quite early on, I would quite like to make a life out of this? If not a career, at least like a lifestyle, and I'd like to be in this long term. Was that a bug that 100%. Bit you early on?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was 1977. Kiss Destroyer was the gateway drug into everything else, right? AC/DC, Black Sabbath, yeah, like all the classics, you know. And then that then led into, you know, Metallica, Slayer, you know, that whole new wave of British heavy metal, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, you know, all that stuff. And then that was sort of the next wave that I really got into. And that was the thing, like, for instance, you're 7 years old and you get into Kiss. It's like, you don't even understand. Like, they're just like aliens from another planet, right? Like, you don't even understand that they're musicians. So not until like Slayer and stuff and Metallica, whenever you go like, oh, like I can pick up an instrument and I can do this, right? Like, this is what I want to do. And then you get in a band and start writing riffs and kicking out the jams in the garage with your bros. And yeah, and then it leads into a thing where you do a show for the first time. And yeah, man. And then you somehow you get a record deal at 15 years old and you start putting out records. Yeah, man. I was bit very early on. Whereas it quite, you know, quite possibly none of that shit could happen. You know, quite possibly, like, even if I was in a band, I mean, very possibly did I never get a record deal. Very possibly did I never even do a show. Very possibly can I never find 4 or 5 other dudes that wanted to do the same thing that I wanted to do, right? Like, you know, who knows? So, you know, I think I was just lucky in a lot of ways, but that doesn't mean that I would have, you know, got bitten with the desire to follow that through after high school. And but yeah, it was just all I wanted to do was pursue being in a band and making music and stuff. That's what I did. You know, that was my focus leaving high school. It wasn't to do anything else. Like, I had the worst, shittiest jobs in between gigs and bands and whatever, just to help
kind of pay stuff for, were you doing?
That help pay for things. Man, I worked at like used clothing stores. I delivered packages. Like, I was like a bar back in a bar, you know, cleaning toilets.
Here we go, Blasco, and second pet appearance. Sorry. See that little guy?
Yeah.
Bunny's reaping havoc. Sorry, I'm with you. Bar, yeah. So barback is what, like a kind of glass collector?
Yeah, that and cleaning the, mopping the floors and, you know, all that shit, dude. Like, and, you know, mostly working at like retail clothing stores. Like, that was sort of where I ended up the most. But like no career choice there. It wasn't like, oh, like, I can't wait to sell my next... Yeah, I can't wait to sell my next, you know, set of pants. It was always just something that was going to fill the gap in the midst of my pursuit of rock and roll stardom. But yeah, man. And then at some point I joined Rob's band, and then I kind of never really looked back since. Had to kind of fill the gaps in from time to time, but for the most part, it's been kind of, you know, music but my whole life, really, in some regard. At least the path has been there, and the pursuit of rock has been there the whole time.
Well, dude, you just led, you know, from the outside looking in, at least, like a very blessed life.
Yes.
The evolution of your career is amazing to go back and read through. And like, so when you get the offer to join Zombie, is that a conversation you have to make with yourself where you make that segue from being a guy in a band to being a hired gun, for lack of a better word? Because obviously you're joining somebody else's project as opposed to, like, you know, creating and evolving your own thing. So is that a conversation you need to have? Is it a long one? Is it an easy choice? And then, like, going into it, well, we'll get to that. But, like, you know, looking in the mirror and saying, do I want to do this? Was that a moment where you did stop and have to weigh up the options, or was it as an easy, clear cut, let's go for this kind of decision?
It was easy, and I had made that decision actually a few years before. Cryptic Slaughter was, you know, a band of guys, and then Drown was a band of guys. And we put out a record. Like I said, Michael Aligo signed us. We were managed by the Piranha Brothers. We were signed to Elektra. We put out a record, did a couple of tours, and then got dropped because the record didn't sell. Maybe because the band wasn't very good, or market, who the fuck knows, right? Who knows why some bands are more successful than others, but we weren't successful, so we got dropped. And at that point I quit the band, and I made the decision, I literally made the decision of, like, I don't want to be in a band with other dudes anymore. I would rather just be in a successful band. That way I'm just given a set list and a time to show up, and I can play songs that are already hits in front of people.
Thousands,
right?
That of was people, yeah.
Right. That Other was the goal. Dozens. And I actually said that out loud. And that's a thing that you can say out loud, and quite very possibly it's not going to happen. Or I know people that have also said that out loud and have been hired by bands or artists whose music sucks, or it just isn't their preference, I should say. At the moment that I made that decision, I joined Prong. And then when that was over, I joined Danzig. And then that's whenever I got the call to join Rob's band. And so, I mean, you got to think about it, dude. I make this decision of, like, I only want to play in other people's band. And for the long and the short of it, dude, I did Prong, I did Danzig, I did Helmet, I did Rob Zombie, and then I did Ozzy, right? And like some of those things only lasted a few minutes, right? But still, that was my goal, and I was able to hit all of those bands, all of which are all of my favorite bands.
Yeah, like, incredible bands, that, and like really like either hugely successful or hugely influential or both, but all incredible.
Right, and honestly too, like, dude, it could have began and ended with Prague, and I probably would have been pretty stoked because that was the first time I was in a tour bus. It was the first time that I toured outside of the United States. It was the first time that I was on European festivals, right? It was the first time that I saw Japan and toured Japan. Like, there was so much cool stuff that happened in that band in a relatively short amount of time. So where, if that's where it would have ended, that still would have been monumental. And then it just continued on from there, which is fucking crazy. And blessed is the right word to use for that, because that shit just doesn't happen. And I've been very fortunate to have played in all of the coolest bands, at least the coolest bands, I think.
Yeah.
And play with cool people, and you know that I made this mission and it actually happened. You know, I don't know. It's remarkable, I guess, in a lot of ways.
And inspirational, man. And a couple of quick questions. So is that why we end up years later, 2021, with Prong out on tour with Black Label? Is that kind of, you know, you're repaying the favor in a way and keeping those relationships strong? And then obviously Joey C was in Danzig for a time. So is that where you guys first meet? And then obviously that leads to Zach Sabbath years later. And then obviously Ozzy and Zach, there's like all these connections that come back around. And that's the beautiful thing about music when it pans out in that way.
It's all intertwined in every way, because I ended up in Prong because they were managed by Walter O'Brien too. So whenever they needed a bass player, I was in the call sheet of dudes that we know that play bass. And so that's kind of where it all started, right? Is like Drown was nothing, but yet Drown introduced me to Rob. It introduced me to Prong. And so the crazy story is that I do Prong, but the tour that I did, the one of the only tours that I did whenever I was in this band Drown, was Prong, the headliner, then Clutch, and then Drown. And so, you know, man, this whole thing starts to spiral out of control. If you look at my life right now, I just
you
put
could do the
Prong
family
on
tree, couldn't you? The heavy metal family tree.
Man, that would be interesting. I should do
That's
that.
That's a book idea right there, dude.
Yeah, it is. And because it's like, I put Prong on tour with Black Label, I manage Clutch now, you know, and that was from relationships from the mid 90s, you know, that were started all because of this thing. And then me being in Drown, you know, met those guys. And then here I am now, I'm touring with Prong. And yeah, man, that's how that works. And God, like, it's all just one kind of weird heavy metal tree, and how that all connects the dots.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Obviously, you learned very early on then about the importance of management. So how far along the road do you start toying with that idea as an avenue for yourself? Is that early on? Does it come later down the line? Is there a moment?
It comes later. Like,
I want this.
Yeah, it comes later because really my upward trajectory of hired gun bass player to dudes whose name is the band name, it just kept going and going, right?
Like, I was like, oh, the tree. Yeah.
Seemingly there's no end until I did reach the top of the tree, which is Ozzy Osbourne. At that point, I'm like, wow, that I never saw that one coming. Right. I never in a million years did I never visualize myself as the bass player of the godfather of heavy metal. Right. Like I never visualized myself playing War Pigs on stage with the dude. Right. And looking over and going, that's the dude. And this is the song, you know. But at that point is whenever I started managing, because I knew that I had reached the end of the road of hired gun, bass player, heavy metal guide to the stars. And so I was like, I don't want to be in a band forever. Really, at this point, I don't want to be some 50-year-old dude trying to figure it out and realize
the next tool's coming in. Yeah.
Yeah. Then realize there's nothing, there is nothing to figure out. So I was like, well, but this is the thing though, is that I knew that I loved music. I knew that I wanted to be enveloped by the energy of music and specifically hard rock and heavy metal. Like, I knew that I didn't want to leave that world, but I needed to find my place in it other than bass player guy. And so I started managing, and here we are, dude. I still do. It kind of just worked out. But that was like 17 years ago, you know, and once again, dude, second time in my life, I made this plan of like, well, I better have a backup plan. I'm going to manage bands and I'm going to do that because when Ozzy retires, that way I'll have my backup plan already in place rather than scramble to try and figure it out. And here we are, dude. I don't know, dude. I must have like some angel looking over my shoulder and guiding my direction, because it's certainly nothing other than outside influence. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of luck, but you know, you can't, luck isn't real, right? It's where like opportunity meets preparedness. And I've had a lot of opportunities and I've been prepared for them, but you know, I'm prepared for a lot of shit, and everyone can be prepared for a lot of shit, but you might not get an opportunity. So I think I've just been really fortunate in that way.
I think there's luck. I think there's divinity. I do think as well, it's right place, right time. It's who you know. It's all these things, but yeah, it's also drive and tenacity and ambition and work ethic and all of those things you clearly possess. Who has been in your life inspirational figures in that department? Without putting words in your mouth, someone like Rob Zombie to me, like, you know, you look at now the fact his first big single is Dragula, right? The Car in Munsters. And he's going on. Michael said when he, you know, parted ways with White Zombie for whatever reason, Michael seemed to just think it was just purely ambition and wanting to outgrow that thing. He was like, I'm going to be a successful solo artist. I'm going to be a filmmaker. He says all these things out loud, like you're saying, and then he becomes all of those things. Did you find him to be like an inspirational guy in that regard, like somebody with a grand plan, a vision and a drive that if he says something, he's going to do it? And did that rub off?
Absolutely. And to your point earlier, so Henry Rollins, who is a huge influence on me, he famously said, I'm not talented, I'm tenacious. And I really resonate with that. regardless of that, I find him to be a huge influence for a number of reasons. And I was able to meet him and interview him for a Black Sabbath documentary. And funny how all these things come around, right? So I go to his house to interview him, and I was like, oh, this is the house that I recorded all the Rob Zombie records at, because Henry bought the house from Scott, the producer of all those early Rob Zombie albums. So it's like random how all this shit is related, you know. And anyway, but on the topic of Rob, yes, had I never looked under the hood on that one and been involved and seen his drive and multi sources of talent, right? And just his vision and how he can execute his vision on multiple platforms is overly fascinating and inspiring. And I mean, he's such a good artist, art artist, and he's such a good visionary, and everything that he does is cool, you know. You know, a lot of people, you know, I mean, a lot of successful people, you know, that are popular, like maybe don't do the coolest shit, right?
He's managed to retain his unique individual idiosyncratic outsider voice, hasn't he? But yet conquered the mainstream culture.
Without a doubt. And it's like, you know, a lot of us don't get to be successful by being cool. And he's been one of, I think if I kind of take away a particular piece of inspiration or a source of inspiration, it's like, man, you don't have to sell out. Like you can be into horror movies and make a career out of that. And not to marginalize his success, but the fact of the matter is, it wasn't like he's like, oh, like I'm into horror movies, but horror movies aren't popular, so I'm going to do something else or focus on some other career. It's like, no, dude, it's like, if what you do you think is cool, you can make a career of that. And fortunately for me, like I kind of took away from that, and I was like, oh, I can do that too. I can wake up every day and do cool shit, or at least that's what I want to do. And I'm fortunate. I remember I was at a festival. I don't know why this particular conversation stands out, because I'm sure I've had this conversation like 3 billion times. But we were at a festival, and I was talking to the singer of Amon Amarth, and we got on the subject of it. And I was just telling him, I go, dude, every day that we wake up as heavy metal dudes and we're able to pay our bills and mortgages and provide for our families and shit because of heavy metal, like, you don't know, because I'm like way older than you, but like, dude, this is a gift from the gods of rock and roll. Like at no point should this be real, right? At no point should heavy metal be a career choice. And we are so fucking fortunate that we did make that career choice and that it worked out for us. Like every day we have to wake up and just thank the gods of rock and be honest and awesome with ourselves and do good work that represents everything, and not take it for granted. Because man, like what did we just witness, man, that it can be taken away from you. I mean, we never thought that to be possible. Right. But we just went through it. It's like, whoa, what just happened? The rug came out from under me. I was pretty sure that thing was attached to the floor, man. Like, what do you mean? We can't do what we do. And that was frightening. And so we got to inject double the amount of positive energy into this awesome genre and music that we all love. Like we got to all of us that have careers in this business and in this genre, dude, we gotta give back double time now, man, because we don't want that shit to happen ever again. You know,
mate, what a refreshing viewpoint to hear, and I align with that viewpoint wholeheartedly. And at this time when we are lacking positive energy like that, that is so refreshing and inspiring to hear, dude. Amen.
Yeah.
You won. Like anybody, as you say, anybody that wakes up, whether it's heavy metal or something else, another lane, right? Another creative field, whatever your passion is, if you wake up and you get to do that for a quote unquote job, then you've won.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, I just use heavy metal as my example, but
because that's your jam. Yeah.
That's my jam. But generally speaking, whatever it is that you are most passionate about, and don't let anyone tell you that you can't make a turn it into a career, even if foreseeably there isn't a career there that even exists before it. So yeah, man, I just gotta say, just gotta go for it. But man, if you get there, don't take it for granted and give back, you know, give back. And like I said, now, man, we got to give back double time.
Indeed. You're the man. Who's the first artist you take on?
What do you mean? As a manager?
As a manager, yeah.
Yeah. So the first real artist I take on is a band called In This Moment.
Okay.
And they were a band on MySpace that had like a 3-song demo, and they had a lot of followers, and they had a lot of comments, and seemingly people really, really liked them. And I was like, I get this. I see what it could be. I see that it's a diamond in the rough, but I visualize that there's people that dig it. And so I met up with them. I signed them. I shopped them around. I got them a deal, and I worked with them over the course of their, you know, sort of initial career, like their first 3 albums. I oversaw them and did that. And second band I signed was Black Veil Brides, which was almost a similar situation, except for they were really successful on YouTube. I don't even think MySpace was a thing at the time, but they were really successful on YouTube. And so I was looking at these opportunities at places where other people weren't. And I was able to kind of visualize the end game based on the fact that there was enough fervor in the digital space that made me realize that there was a fan base there, or there was at least people to market to, and that I also visualized what it could be, because both these bands were a bit of a diamond in the rough when it came to what was available at the time. But I could visualize what was going to happen and how it was going to happen and how I was going to put the pieces in place. And then fast forward fucking 10 years and both the bands just finished a fucking huge tour together.
Yeah. And they're both huge. So, like within the realms of what they do, they're like the biggest, aren't they?
Totally. And then somewhere in there, I picked up Zach and started managing him, and I've been with him ever since. And I recently picked up Clutch, you know, during the pandemic, and I've known those guys forever. And that's a dude, I love those guys.
I'd love to get Neil on the show if he'd be up for it. He's amazing.
Yeah, I think we definitely should do that. So hit me on the side for that, because I'll make that happen.
Amazing.
It's been a really fun ride, and I'm fortunate to work with bands that I really love and bands that I get to wake up and work within music every day. It's fucking awesome.
And still play and still rock and stages, still play, you know?
Yeah.
Like the best of both worlds. Was that ever a decision where you thought like, I'm going to start managing bands. Do I keep playing? Like, do you feel like you need to satisfy that creative urge? or would one day you perhaps just become the guy that only manages? Like, or do you feel like you need to be like a band dude as part of your personality and they'll always be that side?
No, I do not feel that. My thought was always that I was going to retire when Ozzy retires. And that I was then going to then be management, be, you know, what then my thing, even though it is my thing. I mean, it's my full-time thing. I mean, dude, yeah, I haven't done an Ozzy show since New Year's Eve, 2018 into 2019, right? We're about to go into 2022. That was fucking years ago. And so management is my full-time thing, but once Ozzy retires, I really don't have any plans to continue to play. I think at that point, you know, I transition into you know, leaving my on stage career with that guy, which is pretty fucking awesome, I think.
Well, what an epic way to bow out, you know. No more tours too, Ozzy. Good night. Blasco, good night.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's the way I always visualized it and stuff. And I would have no regrets of that, because I did way more than I ever thought that I was going to do. So that being said, you know, I think I can comfortably, you know, depart at the top of my game. You know what I mean?
And is that now 2023? Is that one of the another tour that's been pushed back yet another year? Yeah.
So yeah, man. Yeah. Retirement's still a ways off, I guess. Yeah.
When's the Ozzy record, which is set to come out soon? Are you on that?
I'm not on that. Last couple of records he's made with a producer named Andrew Watt. And, you know, respectfully, you know, it's Ozzy's record, right? His name's on the record. And Andrew has a specific way of making records, and to the point to where he's made huge ass records and won a Grammy for it. Right. So I'm not someone that's going to interrupt that process between those two guys. You know, it's like, I'm there if they think that they need me. But otherwise, man, I'm over here fucking managing rock bands. So I'm good.
Yeah, it seems like as well, like he hasn't really had like the full band for a while. Like, you know, Zach and you kind of like come and go, and, you know, as and when the bat signal flares, like you'll, you know, respond to the call. But it seems like not really since like Trujillo, Mike Bourdin and Zach, when it was like kind of that was like the last band lineup, it seemed like. And since then, he's just been flexible and done what the fuck he wants. And why not, right? Yeah. As you say, it's Ozzy, isn't it?
It's his name's on the record, man, you know. So he can do whatever the fuck he wants, and respectfully, I love that. And then so in terms of Zach and I, so we put out we re-recorded the first Black Sabbath record as Zach Sabbath, put that out a little while ago, and we are in the process of re-recording Paranoid and Master of Reality as well, and we're going to release those at some point.
They're done, are they?
Yeah. It's being done. So Zach still has to do his stuff, but Joey and I have recorded our stuff for it already. So, but yeah, man, we're in the process of doing that. So, yeah, man. Either way, you know, still playing bass on something every so often. So. So I still get to kind of scratch that itch from time to time.
Well, that's the most fun, like, you know, party band, isn't it? And I said this to Zach, and I'll say it to you, like, you guys treated me so good on that tour, and I'm so grateful for that opportunity and experience. Like, you know, when you are in another band's world, you know, it can go one of two ways, and they can either invite you in or, you know, perhaps keep you at the door, and either way is fine. You know, as you've kind of alluded to, like, it's not my name on the tour poster. It's Zach Sabbath. So just to be there is cool. But the way you guys put the arm around me and welcome me into the family was amazing, man. So thank you.
Yeah, dude, it was great. That was a super fun tour. And, dude, like, once again, man, if we're talking about a, you know, whatever, a 12-year-old kid, you know, getting into heavy metal for the first time. And the shit that I have been around and experienced, that 12-year-old self would not believe any of it. So here we are, Matt, on tour in Paris. And the show was awesome. You're DJing, doing our thing. I get up on stage with two amazing guys, right? Zach Wilde and Joey Castillo. And I look over and Bruce Dickinson is on the side of the stage watching the whole show. I can't, it's so hard to process that. Like, dude, I like playing on stage with Ozzy, bonkers. But then just the fact that, like, I'm in a dressing room and Rob Halford walks in. Well, hey, what's up? And then, fucking Bruce Dickinson, like, hanging out, like Brian Johnson and Angus Young coming to a show and hanging out. Like, this is not stuff that is normal. And it's just crazy, dude. You know what I mean? It's crazy to think back on that. Cause that was the last tour. That was the last time I played music, was that tour, because that was like what, February 2020, and we came home and when we locked down March
the thing.
Yeah. And that was the last thing I did, but thank God it was the most fucking fun thing I've done, you know, like in a long time. Yeah, that tour was fucking
Birmingham
great.
On the 50th anniversary of that album as well, like as a, you know, a moment of symbolism. And
it was crazy, man. And it was great to have you along, and the shows were great, and yeah, dude, it was, I don't know. I can't say enough about it. It was fucking fun times.
Well, thank you again, man. And, I love that you have this childlike enthusiasm for what you do still. As I said, it's rare, you know, I chat to a lot of people and everybody loves what they do, but when you genuinely love what you do to that point where it's like, I have to pinch myself every day still. That's really cool and inspiring to see and hear.
I think that has a lot to do with it, right? Because it's like, dude, I'm 52 years old, you know, and people are like, dude, you don't look like you're 52. And I go, yeah, because I drink a lot of water and I get to do heavy metal for a living. Like, how can I get old if that's my plan? Like, you know what I mean? I'm hydrated. And I'm fucking rocking, like, and I get to rock, dude. All and I hang out with fucking cool people, like, dude. I'm like 52 going on 22, you know, and that's the way I feel like my life is. It's like, dude, I, you know what I mean? Like, it's like I'm still that dude with like Iron Maiden and Judas Priest posters on the wall. Like, it's like I'm still that dude. You know?
Yeah, I chat to a lot of people, man, and the lesson that I've taken from the large majority of these conversations is as long as you remove the booze and the drugs at a certain age, then a lifelong career in rock and roll keeps you young because of just that energy. And, you know, you're tapping into that, the well, the fountain of youth. As long as you say, you stay hydrated and at a certain point, put down the sauce and the powder and just focus on the music, then, you know, look at people like Ozzy and Brian Johnson and Mick Jagger. I just saw the Stones in Austin when I was out there. The guy's like over 80 years old and he's running around stage for like 90 minutes at a time, you know, with the kind of the fitness levels of somebody a third his age, let alone half. And that's rock and roll.
Killing it, dude. Yeah, you're right. It is. It is the energy of rock that keeps that dude forever young.
Rock and roll. Well, Blasco, on that note, this has been awesome. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for everything.
Of course.
And yeah, I will hit you up about Neil if that's all right. And
yeah, absolutely.
And I hope to see you soon, man. Like, I might be out in LA potentially for the launch of my next book, which is going to be March next year. It was funny, actually, last year my book came out on the same day as Andy's on Rare Bird, the exact same day.
Oh,
those books
I
didn't
realize
out.
That
yeah. I think he and sold
so
significantly
your
more copies
book?
Than me. The next one is just volume two. So same concept, same premise, just another lineup of guests, another lineup of topics. And
and Rare Bird as well?
Rare Bird as well. Yeah.
Nice. I love Tyson, man. He's the best.
He's awesome. As are you, my friend.
I gotta think about doing a book. I don't I just I don't have an angle. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like,
I like that heavy metal tree idea. I like looking at it from that angle. Like, maybe you could extend it to beyond just your story, and you look at the story of like that kind of 80s and 90s metal scene and how all of these stories and, you know, connections form and where they lead to, like a mind
it is interesting
of metal musicians.
Yeah, it is interesting how that, yeah. But yeah, I want to do one. Maybe that is the angle. I gotta commit to a vision of what it is, you know what I mean? So,
well, no time like the present, dude.
I know. Yeah. Should have thought about it fucking 2 years ago, right whenever we hit the pandemic. But I had plenty of free time then.
Dude, Merry Christmas, man. Hope you have a great holiday.
You too.
And yeah, thank you for everything again, man. This has been awesome.
Of course. Email me about Neil.
Yeah. I will. Nice one, Blasco.
Hi, buddy.
Cheers, thanks, brother. Buddy.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.